This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 15th of October, 2021. Wow, what a change in market temperature we've seen over the last couple of days, as you can see from pulling up any chart of U.S. equity markets and global equity markets largely following suit. Just a blistering rally yesterday as we blast through the key resistance levels. A real change in temperature recently, some of the fears, at least on the interest rate side, that have been dogging the market, suddenly fading. I don't know if we've seen a gamma flip as well, if you will, a gamma flip being when options exposures, derivatives exposures require constant added buying as the gamma exposure increases with the rise in price. Regardless, we have worked through some key resistance levels, 15,000 area on the NASDAQ 100, and as you can see on slide two in today's slide deck, and you can find that link in the podcast description. We've sort of blasted through this 4,400 to 4,420 area that we identified as key resistance on the first attempt when it failed to take that out. And now it has taken it out. As you can see, we've even closed above the 61.8% of the entire retracement of the entire sell-off here. So really very little territory left to the highs there. The NASDAQ 100 in relative terms, a little bit lower relative to the top and still below the 61.8. But you can see the different mix of baskets we have on the right. A lot of these of speculative nature doing quite well, and semiconductors really having a banner day yesterday. But also importantly, mega caps. And that's important, of course, for the performance of the broader market. A bit interesting to see crypto down there at minus 0.1%, because overnight we had some key news out of the U.S. The Securities and Exchange Commission, apparently, at least according to Bloomberg sources, set to approve the trading or launch of some Bitcoin ETFs, which are based on Bitcoin futures. These from some of the big providers, I believe it's ProShares, and there was another one mentioned in the article, and we really saw a big boost to sentiment there overnight. I think the action also underlying some sympathy with general risk sentiment. So just all phasers set to stun for sure in terms of risk appetite, risk on here, a weaker dollar. And again, those sort of prone U.S. yields at the long end of the curve, adding to the sense of a comeback. What's your take here, I'll tell you, on U.S. yields? How low can we go in this consolidation? It's of course, a bearish, at least bearish yields, bullish bonds, that we saw a reversal of these new highs recently. A couple of strong auctions earlier this week. What do you think the market is focusing on in the coming days and couple of weeks here?
Well, John, the strong flattening of the yield curve indicates that economic sentiments is souring up. And it's very hard to reconcile with other market moves, such as higher interest rate swaps. My take is that the market is overreacting and is possibly starting to price a stagflationary environment. But I still believe that we are quite far away from it, because by the end of 2021, the economy is expected to grow around close to 6%. Inflation is above 5%. So really, to see those 10-year yields or longer yields, because also the 30 years dropped by 11 basis points within two sessions, dropping so fast, it doesn't really fit the picture. So today we have retail sales coming out from the US, and I will take you to slide number three. It's very possible that if retail sales are weak because market sentiment is so bullish at the moment, we might see the 10-year yields trying and testing breaking below that support level at 1.5%. But I still believe that in the last quarter of the year, it's more probable for higher rates rather than lower, because the market has to begin to price earlier interest rate hikes. And when that cycle begins, it's very unlikely to see long-term rates falling.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I wonder how much lower we can go in these yields. Maybe we can stay range bound for a while, but you penciled in that 1.4% level as really key, sort of the top of the prior range before we saw this big move higher in late September, early October. So it'd be very interesting to see there. To me, if we're going below 1.4% and significantly below 1.5%, really, there's just something weird going on here with either the structure of the market, maybe foreign demand, what have you, but some of that coming from Japan, or there's the market is saying something about forward growth fears. And speaking of growth fears, an interesting review or revising of German growth next year from, well, who was it from? One of these German research outfits revising that expansion lower, but not really sort of for the reasons you normally would expect in previous cycles.
No, absolutely. We had this group of research institutes, which include the IFO, the IFW, that have revised the German 2021 expansion from 3.7% to 2.4%, which is quite a downgrade. And the revision was caused because they see input shortages, lack of shipping capacity, a spike of energy cost. So everything seems to pile out into slower growth. And obviously that provoked yields lower, not only in Germany, but in the whole euro area. If you open up on slide number 4, you will see that 10 years bond yields rose this week as nearly as minus 0.07%, trying to test that resistance there. And now they've fallen back below support at minus 0.15%. So definitely at this point, what is key to watch within the EU is more about monetary policies and inflation. It seems that the ECB now is working towards new programs to basically substitute the TEP program and the APP program, making the central banks more dovish. That could definitely foster bullish sentiment in the European sovereign bond market. But we cannot forget that bond yields are really correlated to US treasuries. And if yields in the US resume to rise, and once that a new coalition is formed in Germany to govern in the next few years, then we might see those rates peaking higher.
Yes, there was a headline I saw this morning also on that note that Scholz, the SPD, had Scholz, who's expected to be the new chancellor in Germany, saying he expected to be in office by the end of the year. So we'll be watching for that. And then the signals on the climate, and it's so interesting to see them signaling on the climate when the European economy risks being on its knees, especially on the industrial side with these power and natural gas prices, which have sort of crept back higher. So we reversed the very worst couple of days of that spike, but they've crept back higher. Oil prices posting new highs as well for the cycle yesterday. So, and then you're seeing in the US, they're running around. It's not almost pathetic. It is pathetic. They're running around trying to find out ways they can get to oil prices or oil production increased despite the supposed green agenda. And then in China, they are pulling out all the stops to increase coal production as they want to have, of course, thermal coal supplies plentiful ahead of the winter. It gets pretty cold in northern China where a lot of the population lives up there. And then you have, I mean, together with this massive resurgence in equity prices, we're seeing we hardly really stumbled. We saw yields widening a bit in some of the riskier credit space recently, but it's pretty modest stuff, especially relative to recent cycles. So you're pointing out, looks like that credit still remains, extremely generous financial conditions here.
Absolutely. And that you can see that on slide number 5, that shows the option adjusted spread for CCC junk corporates in the US over US treasuries. And it is true that it widened up around 90 basis points from June's low. But if you look at the historical data, it is still trading at the second lowest OS since 2007. The main take here is that, junk corporate bonds continue to be supported. And the reason why they continue to be supported is because they are the only asset within fixed income that they can provide a buffer against rising inflation and rising interest rates. But still, they are entering in a dangerous zone for the simple reason that volatility is spiking within the US Treasury markets, within rates, and sooner or later, they are going to suffer from it.
All right, let's have a look at what's going on in the currency space, because I think sort of helping out, certainly at the margin, with those lower U.S. yields and range-bound U.S. longer yields and the weaker dollar certainly helping out on risk, the risk sentiment front. And one of the interesting little, oddball things we had happen yesterday was sterling really has really been firm here, is heading to new highs locally through key resistance in cable. So that 136.50, 70 area gave way with quite some ease yesterday, rushed to new highs, 137.30 or so, and then fell back later in the day. Likewise, euro sterling poking towards the cycle lows, 84.50 area, but rising to close about unchanged. That was on a couple of Bank of England officials out jawboning. One of them is sort of really well-identified Dove Tenreiro talking about self-defeating rate hikes. And then another one, Catherine Mann, saying that she was not in favor of, or she wanted to push back against this sense of imminent rate hikes because the market was already doing some tightening. But interesting to see this morning already these charts I put up on slide 6 are out of date. So we need to pull up your sterling charts if you want to see the latest action. We've essentially reversed that Bank of England knee jerk, and we have sterling back into sort of top of the heap, among G10 currencies against this very weak dollar, and even weaker. And when we look at the next slide, slide 7, that Japanese yen, look at the trend reading, minus 9. So the yen really racing to the downside here on the combination of commodity prices rising. That's very yen negative. It's quite interesting to see this move despite the sort of range bound and lower yields. That's normally would be a non-factor for the yen weakening. But I think one of the keys here is the incoming new administration with Kishida, who's sending out signals that he's against Abenomics, he's against the neoliberal agenda and reforms that are all pro-business and not about addressing situations like inequality. There was one capital gains tax idea that was raised, but it's basically been nixed because of the reaction in the market. But he's got other things like worrying about tax incentives raising wages for care workers and nurses. And he's also recycled some of the comments we've seen in the US about the need for self-sufficiency, things like being reliant on foreign supply chains or excessively reliant on foreign supply chains as a key issue. So very interesting to see. A level like that is extreme. We can't step in against it, but it's getting to be in the remarkable territory. Dollar yen rushing towards the 114.50 major resistance area. It's almost there really this morning. Can 115 provide any psychological resistance? We'll see. As long as this backdrop of spiking commodity prices, very strong risk on and no problems in the credit world, especially in EM, where a lot of Japanese investors are active from a carry perspective, I think it just encourages this trend to continue. I've also pulled up a Euro Stocky chart, so Euro versus the Swedish krona, just to note that Euro Stocky at massive levels, 10, a major psychological level, and it was near the lows in early this year. And if you tilt your head a little bit to the right, you can see a sloped head and shoulders formation for that chart. So quite interesting to note that. Earnings front, let's go to slide 8. We had Wells Fargo and Bank of America out today. Quite a contrast between those two banks. Bank of America noting some massive success in its investment advisory business, huge growth there, and even managed a very meager but still positive growth in loans. And the Bank of America share price rushed to a new high close for the cycle in an otherwise, of course, very positive market, whereas Wells Fargo dipped and had a pretty ugly day of it. They had a charge on some, I think it's legal proceedings, but also noting that their loan growth, and this is the largest Main Street bank in the U.S., was down some 8% on a comparative basis. So that's that's pretty ugly stuff there. And of course, doubly ugly that it's falling in an otherwise rising market. On tap today, we have Goldman Sachs and Charles Schwab and among the financial companies, also this PNC Financial Services. And next week, I don't have the list here, but we'll, of course, have that out for you on Monday. We'll be looking into the next round of more sort of less financials and more on the real economy side of things with the next batch of earnings. Okay, let's get to the interesting data points today. You can skip to the macro calendar on slide 10. This is really the two important things here, the U.S. retail sales that Althea mentioned. Market expecting a minus 0.2% at the headline, but still positive on the X auto and gas reading, plus 0.4%, which is a pretty impressive expectation when you look back at that August figure of plus 2% for that category month on month, and that we're still working sort of post-stimulus check environment. So this will, I think, be key to see, you know, at least on a moving average basis, the sense to which we're seeing U.S. consumers dis-saving and willing to run out and spend their savings. A lot of the stimulus, let's recall, was saved last year and early this year. But the one I think even more interesting is this University of Michigan sentiment survey. And I've put up a comparison on slide 9. I think this is one of the more interesting charts that I've put together recently, just for what may be driving why sentiment, you know, given we have a white hot economy here, why sentiment, at least according to this survey, hit its worst levels since well before the pandemic. So even lower than August than we saw during the worst of the pandemic outbreak months in early 2020. And we're back to whatever that level is, the 2012 level, but well below 75 here. But interesting to see, if you look at the 5-year on slide eight, slide 9 again, the 5 to 10 year inflation expectations. So normally the one they published is the median expectation. And that one is perched right at 3%, which was touched many times back 10 years ago, the last time it was this high, and several times since then. And then that is also the high for this cycle. But look at the mean expectations. So this, the mean expectations, to me, are quite interesting because they're suggesting that at least among some survey participants, inflation is becoming unanchored, or inflation expectations are becoming unanchored, and they're starting to put up some pretty big numbers and forecasts in their expectations ranges. In fact, we're getting towards those 2008 levels, which are very high because of the oil price going crazy up to almost $150 a barrel. Also note that this latest surge in inflation expectations is coming at the same time as this dip in sentiment. So maybe this dip in sentiment is not so much about activity and the traditional driver of weak sentiment, which is poor job prospects, but the concern about inflation. I think this is a key story for how things shape up from here. So we'll be watching that. Stagflation is not going to be the market's best friend, even though we do have U.S. markets and other markets equity-wise blasting, it seems, ever higher. So that'll be the interesting final input into this weekend. For next week's calendar, I only managed to populate with Monday's data. We'll get the rest of that updated for you for the Monday podcast. Until then, let's see how things develop. All looks great now. We have some medium-term concerns around all of this that we'll, of course, continue to talk about with our next editions of the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.